ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
The EVs that we've already got have saved us 1.3 days worth of fuel demand. For each EV, that stockholding requirement that we've got stretches further for the people who don't have an EV.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
A big pushback to tax changes proposed by the Labor government is underway. While the government works its political muscle to try and get its proposed budget measures across the line ASAP, small businesses and startup founders have raised a very loud alarm on capital gains tax changes. So, will their campaign work, or is this the noise that comes when a gravy train for some is about to be smashed? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Raf Epstein, host of Mornings on ABC Radio Melbourne.
Raf, a fight is not just brewing, but like it's here, I think. I don't think it's brewing anymore. I think we're in the middle of it and there's lots of fisticuffs sort of coming at us, coming at the government, coming at the opposition, depends what side you're on all of this. It's about business. It's about startups. It's about people who want to make the money. No, it's true. Yes. It's the and they should. People should make money. I'm not being anti-money. You should go make money. But it's about those people versus the government on capital gains tax. You're laughing at me because you know I'm right.
I'm just trying to work out who's in the anti-money party, but still, continue.
Well, apparently Labor, if you listen to Pauline Hanson, she says they're communist. So, you know, it's about your framing.
According to my listeners, it's socialism on the text.
They think it is.
They're accusing the federal government of socialism, some of the listeners. Yeah.
Well, see, there you go. So that would be anti-money or pro-collectivising money. Let's go to the point. It comes after the polling, which we unpacked in the podcast yesterday with Jacob Greber, showed that public reception to the budget is, you know, mixed. I think it's mixed. So it depends which number you're reading, and that's where a lot of the spin comes from. That's why I'm personally waiting for a bit more data before we can be sure of the reaction. But, Raf, you're a man of the people. You're a man on the ground with you're talking to the punters, whereas me, my ivory tower, I don't know, inner city elite with my lattes. I don't know anything about real people. I've never lived a hard day in my life. You tell me.
I think I'm just going to sit back and let PK talk. Maybe the place to start. So, yes, there's a lot of blowback. The question is, how big is the blowback and how long does it endure? Let's do the spectacular stuff first, right? Some of this social media stuff is funny. It is witty. Anthony Albanese on the Pilates table doing the splits because he's coming to take my Pilates business. I think it's worth going to some of the lines in this AI campaign on social media. We are thrilled to announce that Anthony Albanese now owns a completely accidental 47% stake in our cleaning business, despite never touching a mop, answering a client call, or making a single bed. So that's one of the claims that's out there on social media. First, a few things to say. No one is paying 47% of their profit in tax. That's your marginal tax rate that some small businesses that might get treated as a big business might pay. The owner of the business might pay.
So they might pay. Hang on a minute, because there's always a kernel of truth.
So they're using kernels of truth in this campaign. There's some significant caveats, right? If you're in a small business, and I found this really interesting on Talkback this morning, people know if this applies to them or not. And the Treasurer was saying this morning, Jim Chalmers, if you've already got one of these generous exemptions from capital gains tax, that remains. So the essential exemptions, they don't apply to everyone all the time, but if you're retiring, if your turnover is less than $2 million, if your assets are worth less than $6 million, if you can count your assets as active assets, if your turnover is less than $2 million, if your assets are worth less than $6 million, that's a lot of small businesses, then the new rules on capital gains won't apply. But it goes to a lot of these conversations. If more tax is paid by some people, how does that land and how do people hear it? I had a ton of people ringing up and saying, look, I run a small business. I'm exempt. I don't know what people are talking about. But to go to the text I got about socialism and to go to your anti-money vibe, How do you, as a government, handle this? I think the government put out a fact sheet, right? I don't know how effective fact sheets are. Most people, their capital gain tax bill's going to go up a bit from just over 19% to just over 21%. Now, okay, that's a stat. That's Treasury modelling. Most people's capital gains tax isn't going up much. How do they sell it? How do they use that information? Are they hammering those lines home? And I don't know, what do you think? I get the sense they are not enjoying themselves. You know, they really aren't. And it's always important, right? Sometimes I often feel politicians win if they look like your back's against the wall and you're like, no, no, Patricia, let me tell you why this is a rip snorter. Then they're in a good place. I'm not getting that vibe from the government. I don't know what people have been saying to you privately. They're not panicking. Some of them are concerned. They're hoping people's real life experience will, you know, that'll get them through. People know most people aren't affected. How do you think they are selling? Because a lot of numbers and a lot of tax action arrangements that most people don't understand.
Okay, couple of things. You know, the old saying, the old adage in politics is if you're explaining, you're losing.
Yes.
They're explaining a lot. They have to explain. Therefore, you'd have to say losing, right?
Not definitely losing, but it's harder to win, definitely.
Okay, let's go with that.
Because they might win the argument, right? They didn't have the argument. Now they're having the argument. They could win.
Yeah. So what they're banking on, boom, boom, banking, because their bank accounts are going up. Oh, my God. What they're banking
on. Thank God you've got a day job.
I got a couple, mate. I'm busy. What they're banking on is that because they have the power of government, and they do, you know, right now Treasury is being asked to explain this, to negotiate on this, to consult on this, which they didn't when they put some contentious changes before, that they will be able to ride this shitstorm and get to a good place eventually, and that will all be legislated and dealt with by the time they face the political music, i.e. an election. I think that's, you know, probably a little bit column true.
Oh, it's doable, isn't it? It's doable. Whether or not they can do it, it's doable.
No. So the big question is, will they make adjustments? That's the big question, because they're in a negotiation stage. That's the truth. They have to construct the legislation, get it through the parliament. I suspect that there will be changes. Already we heard, even before this was even handed down, that they were talking and consulting with the tech sector on that element. So that's the startups and the impact on them. Yeah.
They've got a great case, right? So if
PK, they've also got a great deal in the budget, by the way, because there are other measures for them in the budget.
Sure. But if PK and RAF set up a cleaning business and we spend, I don't know, say we spend 10 grand on all the gear and then we sell it down the road for 50 grand, okay. But when you're a startup, it's just PK and RAF come up with a great app idea. Like your capital's zero. You're going, so let's say we sell that for 10 grand, we get taxed on all of it. So startups have a good case for being treated differently to other businesses. But you're right, if they haven't bedded down the details, who jumps into or who jumps onto the same train as the startups? Do you think they're going to have a
carve out?
No. Do you think they're going to have an easy ride landing the detail they want to land?
No. They already don't. You can see it in the first couple of days. Some of it, I think they're a little underprepared for. Are you getting that feeling?
They were underprepared for the trust stuff. And you're right. There's not, like, I watched the Health Minister, Mark Butler, being interviewed on one of the commercial breakfast shows about whether or not someone has to pay stamp duty in a testamentary discretionary trust when it switches over to a fixed one. Like, that's just agony for a politician. I don't know if you can.
And it's not his portfolio.
It's not his portfolio, but that's what you have to do if you make a change like this. On the other hand, when it comes to things around small business and how much you pay on the profit when you sell your business, I actually got the sense when I spoke to the small business lobby group this morning, COSBOA, they know what the issues are. They know the government knows what the issues are. So I think the government's done the hard work on the bigger, broader areas, like small businesses in Australia, pretty important. Whether or not they've done enough work, like look at some of Angus Taylor's language. If I can just read you some of his presser today, like this is apocalyptic language. How much of it lands, right? Across the spectrum, from local cafes to bigger manufacturers, construction, small business, they are scared, they are petrified that they are about to lose their business after working so hard for so many years. Now, no one's coming to shut down these businesses. No one's actually significantly doubling or tripling their taxes. But he can say that because a lot of people are scared and they are worried. I don't know if – is there better preparation a government could have done? Like, they're changing something so broad. We all thought the capital gains – well, we're all talking about capital gains as a change to do with housing, right? But it's – any capital gain. If
exactly.
I go out and buy a comic book
exactly.
and then sell it 10 years later, that's going to be taxed.
So look how so they've already they wanted to frame this budget in terms of housing and intergenerational fairness.
Yes.
And already their narrative is off the rails. It is because we're not talking today or yesterday about housing or young people
they're
having a go.
We're talking about the philosophy behind a tax system.
We're talking about businesses that employ people. We're talking about growing the pie, the economy. And this is hurting Labor. And I think they know it. So my bold prediction is that you will see, and I mentioned that I thought you were asking me about it because I clearly wanted to be asked. I think you will see more carve-outs. The Treasurer's line about, and I'll read it to you, he says... The government, well, I've just, you know, the spirit of it, I'll make
okay.
it easier for you, is that the government doesn't want to create different rules for different asset classes because that would create distortions. Now, on my purist, I'm a purist, I see what he means, right? You don't...
In my economics lecture at Melbourne Uni when I understood the design of tax system...
Yes.
Very appealing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You don't want a gaming of the system, and that's exactly the problems we have now, that you know, you create sort of different ways of avoiding tax and you go into other classes. However, to politically win this one, I cannot see how they will.
You don't think they'll win the argument?
No, I think they're going to end up carving it out. Yeah, I think
significantly carving out.
I do.
You mean significant carve-outs for capital gains.
Yeah.
So let me put the counter-argument only from...
You don't think they'll carve it out?
I don't think there's going to be big carve-outs, no. I think they are hoping most people are already unaffected, so they won't have to provide the carve-outs. One thing actually someone said to me, someone who helped design the budget, I'll keep it that broad, a lot of people want the government to be trying something. They are willing to give this a go and hear things out. I'm not worried it's early days. So that there are, so maybe that's just something someone says, even though they know that's a private conversation, they know that I talk in public a lot. No, I would actually bet them on not having significant carve-outs. That doesn't mean they're not going to cop a lot of pain. I do think so it's not the franked dividends, right? It's not everybody's mum and dad have got a franked dividend that Labor's coming after in 2019. A lot of people with a small business aren't affected. A lot of people with a trust, and, you know, good luck to you if you can afford to set up a trust and have the assets
look,
and need one.
We should just call it for what it is. You're in
it's
a happy
wealthy.
Position.
You're in a happy you're
if
in
you
a,
are making one of those trusts that I've just learned how to pronounce, you're lucky. You
the
are,
testamentary discretionary
thank you.
Ones. Just need to switch it over to a fixed one.
Try and say that on TV 7 times in a row.
Testamentary discretionary trust.
Without your tongue doing weird
if
things.
If my children are Patricia and Raf, I just give Patricia 50% and Raf 50%. And then when I die, I don't get a say. That is called a fixed testamentary trust. If you're not happy with that and the tax advantages that come with it.
You're dead anyway.
Well, you are dead, but you're in a very small exclusive club. What I'm saying is that it's the same with small business. So the real people who are impacted by these changes is it's not most people who own a small business. But it gets to one thing that Angus Taylor is actually landing a lot. It was something I was watching for. Those two phrases he used last week that have Tony Abbott written all over them in my mind. Toxic taxes and an attack on aspiration. Your small business might not be worth $6 million and you might not have a turnover more than $2 million, but you'd like to think it would get there. So if those people are going to be impacted and those people are going to have, you know, a change in how much they pay when they sell their business – maybe Angus Taylor can turn that into a powerful weapon. I think he definitely digs himself out of a hole. He's sort of standing up for, he's standing up for small business, right? Like small business constituency.
He's standing up for a constituency that's traditionally been liberal and they've become alienated with a lot of their traditional constituencies. So that's helpful, isn't it?
I think it is helpful and maybe he staunches the bleeding. I do think... they've both got a lot to defend. Angus Taylor has to defend where you're going to find all the money if you're going to give me a tax cut every year and can you actually do it? Labor's got to switch from, and I think you're right to say, instead of talking about housing and intergenerational equity, they're talking about the design of a tax system. Now, me personally, I'm so up for the talking about the design of a tax system because I think it's really important. I don't think most of the country has the time and the attention span for a discussion about the philosophy about why everyone who invests money should be taxed the same way everybody who works and earns a salary. That's the difficulty for them. Do you think I'm wrong? Why do you think I'm wrong if I say they won't have significant carve-outs? I think startups, yes, but small business and other stuff, no.
Okay, look, I'm not sure. I'm not going to make a call, I mean, about the extent of the carve-outs. I don't think
this
I'm
is a,
certain.
This is a right? Call-safe zone. We're allowed to make calls that we get wrong.
But I'm not certain that it'll be significant. So, okay, I'm going to walk back that because I think the word is loaded. It implies like wholesale, huge change. But I just think they're going to have to, maybe it's just startups, but even that we're saying just startups, it wasn't at the start of the week, right? Like there's already going to be alterations because this is smashing them. And as I say, because it's the only thing that matters, they're not talking about what they wanted to be talking about, which is that they're doing this for you, young millennial or Gen Z that wants to get ahead, buy you one house. Aren't we changing the system?
So can I give you the counter? Maybe the counter. To hark back to something I said a while ago with you, if it's a top versus bottom fight and not a left versus right fight, like if that's what politics is now, you're either with or against the people keeping me down. If the government can turn it into we're evening things up for the little guy, we are making things fairer for everyone. That is about us being on your side against the people who are wealthy and the people making the argument. And what does the PM say? If the coalition and their allies mount this scare campaign, or it's language to that effect, maybe it can play into that dominant political theme where the independents and people like Pocock and people like Hanson, I would argue as well, get their steam, which is the bottom versus the top. If they can turn it into that argument, is it less painful than you were describing?
If they can, if but they can. I'm doubting that they can. I have not seen them be able to do it so far, and I think that's significant, right? So they're being outplayed at the moment, I think. And they're being outplayed by a pretty ordinary opposition.
Is the opposition misusing?
Well, the opposition is the media at this stage.
Well, that's where I was going to get to get to.
Yeah.
Are the stories fair?
Some of them are fair. I don't think you can say some are fair, absolutely.
Yeah. Is it a death tax if it only affects a minuscule number of people using trusts and they can rearrange their trusts?
Well, you know.
Is it a death tax?
Yeah, it is, obviously.
For a small number of people?
Absolutely. That's the caveat that I think does give it much more nuance. Okay. And we don't live in a nuanced world. So once you use death tax, the reason Labor objects to it is that it implies all inheritances are to be taxed. And they are absolutely correct that that is not the legislation that they plan to introduce. However, it happens upon death. It's a tax change. You cannot also argue that it's not just because it's not politically comfortable for Labor.
Is it an attack on aspiration to change capital gains on everyone?
It may have an impact. It may have an impact, which I consider to be potentially minor on some aspiration, but it may be necessary for fairness. This is the thing. And what we're really arriving at, I think, where we're very much in agreement, is that that's very grey, that space. You know,
politics is about the grey.
Yeah, but it's also very hard to land those arguments. And right now, back to my, you know, I think that they've kind of lost where they want the narrative to be. And you can see that they're trying to fix that, actually. They're trying to correct that quickly because they can see that it's coming at them in all sorts of ways. So we have everyday stories in the Fin Review, stories in The Australian, raising these questions about whether there's a death tax or this, which is skewing then the questions coming, right? So no longer about, you know, Joe wants to buy a house and in Nunawading and wasn't able to and now can. That's the story they want with the, you know, they stand next to people desperate to buy a home, trying to tell that story. It gets smashed by the other stories. But that's because they have a taxation system that they're trying to change much more widely than we expected.
I'm not saying that
that's not maybe worth trying or has merit. But you can't, it's not the same as just a property tax changes, which is what we thought it was maybe going to be.
Let's talk about their tone then, because I think I accept a lot of what you say. I would reserve my judgment on whether or not they're making their argument well, because it's always tough, I think, the week after a budget. So I would hold my judgment on that for a week or two. Tone. Like I'm always interested as much in someone's tone, and I made that point about whether or not they're happy. I noticed that Phil Khoury accused the government of being condescending when they were criticised for their questioning, and I think that tone comes across sometimes. I think Angus Taylor doesn't necessarily look happy prosecuting this case, but he's looking more comfortable.
Confident.
Yeah, I would call it even definitely more confident than last week. I think he was very lacking in confidence, especially straight after the government's budget and in his budget reply. Does the government need to think about having more of a good time at press conferences rather than looking like these are all really annoying, pesky questions that I shouldn't have to waste my time dealing with?
Yeah. Yes. So hard yes. Hard yes to that. So the thing about being a government or anyone is you do have to deal with questions that you might think are unfair, banal, agenda-driven, loaded.
Well, they are. They're all those
irritating
things.
And that's unfortunately part of the job. Man does job, right? Like I find lots of parts of my job can be frustrating. That's true.
Yeah, sure.
So you just got to do your job. And part of it is not telling people off for how they're doing their job, even if you don't like how they're doing their job. In fact, one of the best things of our current media architecture is that people watch the press conferences often in full. Not everyone, people are at work, but you can. And if you want to hate on the journalists, as we saw during COVID, you can.
Yeah.
You can make your own judgments. It's all there in the fullness of the democratic project, which I'm a big fan of, rather than sort of, you know, curated for you.
Yes.
And so I think, like, fronting up, which they have been fronting up every day.
Oh, they're fronting up. They do lots of interviews. It's not like they're running away from the media.
No, they're not.
Can I give you two examples that are away from federal politics, maybe that talk about tone? The guy who led the Liberals in Victoria to two elections, Matthew Guy, always used to get angry with the media.
Yeah.
I think it was a big problem. Over in Britain right now, the current Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, always looks like he'd rather be somewhere else when he is being questioned. He really does.
He does.
And the current contender, although there's lots of hurdles in his way, Andy Burnham, who's the Mayor of Greater Manchester, he always looks like he's having a lovely time. And Patricia, there's nowhere I'd rather be than answering your questions. And so that's got zero to do with policy. It's got zero to do with the power of your argument, and it's got everything to do with the vibe people hear. And I think that makes a huge difference to whether or not people are open and receptive to your message.
I think that's right. And also it's just counterproductive, really. That's the other thing. Like, it doesn't actually...
You just can't let it show, right? If it gets you down, you can't let it show.
You can't. It doesn't advance your own cause, right? Like, but that's like a life lesson anyway. If you were here annoying me, I have to look happy, don't I? I mean, sorry, I'm just cracking myself up today. Now, Raph, even though the budget, which was only a week ago, is still dominating headlines, this morning the Health Minister, Mark Butler, flagged a delay in the implementation of the formal price caps for support for home aged care services. Now, you've done a lot of reporting about aged care access and the system not working very well. Are you surprised by the delay?
I'm not surprised. I think what's interesting is not what they are doing. It's they're not doing it. And what's interesting is why they're not doing it. Aged care in the home, massively growing field. It's a massively growing queue. They need to put a cap at some stage on the prices that people ask for when they provide those aged care services in the home. The Health Minister, Mark Butler, was out there saying, yes, we agree with the idea of price caps. Yes, it's a good idea, but we are going to delay it. Here's why I think this is interesting. Sure, they have to do it. The government makes the point that a lot of the NDIS providers charge at the top. Mm. So when you set that cap, that often ends up effectively, you're not setting the top price, you're setting most people's prices. I think what's interesting about this is it's been delayed because of the war, right? They don't know what inflation is going to be. And it might seem a bit bizarre that ships not moving in the Strait of Hormuz and Donald Trump talking to Xi Jinping can have an impact on something as domestic as aged care in the home. But I think it is having an impact. Like, they don't know if they're getting, what was the highest inflation figure in the budget? I think it was like 7%.
Oh, I don't forget that number.
No.
So when I saw it, I genuinely was like,
that's terrifying.
Terror came through my body.
So yeah. If they have to delay something like aged care, and it's got this massive queue, right? You've got to queue up to get assessed.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got to queue up to use the money after you've been assessed. Then you've got to queue up to get the person to come to your home where you can use the money. But they're delaying the design of that scheme because they don't know where inflation's going. They don't know where crude oil is going. I think one thing the government say that I think is important, in other parts of the world, they're not going to work one day a week. Like, people aren't eating in some countries in Asia because of the impact of no ships moving in the Strait of Hormuz. This is having an impact on aged care. Like, it's yet another bit of sand in the gears of aged care reform. And it's a war that we've got nothing to do with. And also, worse than that, no one knows when it's going to end. So do you think that's too much of an extrapolation?
No, I don't think it's. I think actually I'm in furious agreement with you. And it's wild to think of the far-reaching consequences.
Yeah. It's a disaster.
Yeah, it is. And have you noticed, I feel like the public's appetite because of the standstill we're at with this war, this kind of like Trump can't get out, but he's not quite in, he's delayed his attack on Iran again,
so he
tells us. Yeah, exactly. It might just sort of suddenly happen. But there's only one message from it all. There's no movement as a result, or it's very little
and
minor
people,
movement.
People around the world are suffering. People aren't eating in the Philippines. They're not cooking hot food in Vietnam. And in suburbs all around Australia, there's more uncertainty. You don't want to be like my dad and get the letter after you die for aged care in the home. Mm. But that still happens to people. Like they progress in that queue after they have died. And this is another bit, this is another delay in that process. So that's, I don't know, that seems pretty far-reaching to me.
Yeah, it's pretty far-reaching. Raph, always loved the pod with you. It's always, I feel like, have I had a Barney or a cuddle? What is it? I'm not
sure.
A bit of both. But yeah, a bit of both, yeah.
And who's anti-money? But anyway.
I said I love money.
Yeah.
I mean.
But does that mean I don't?
No, we both love
money. We both love
money. But we also hate it sometimes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm happy with that position. Can I, look, just final note, actually. Got a call from John today.
Yeah.
John bought a cabin in a caravan park in Melbourne, mm-hmm. in Dingley Village. The caravan park's being sold. John's lived there for 8 years. He paid $60,000 for that portable home. He hasn't got the money to move it. He's got nowhere to move it to. He has never owned a house. He is 72 years old. He poured his life savings into this cabin. The developer's selling that land. The developer's under no obligation to help him move it. He cannot live there anymore. Probably the only option he has is a room in a rooming house. He can't sell that cabin. He is stuck. John is stuck. I am sure John is not alone, and all of his savings are going to sit in some sort of cabin / caravan that might be worth nothing. So that's worth thinking about as you contemplate how the tax changes impact you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sobering and sad story. Raph, thank you for joining me.
Always a pleasure, PK. Genuine pleasure.
Tomorrow, pod friend David Spears will join us to look at the political to-ing and fro-ing of the day, see if he knows anything. Has he got the skinny on something? Does he know if they're going to water it down, these changes, like I claim I know? You can also send a short voice note to theparneyroom@abc.net.au and we will try and answer your question in a special Question Time edition. See you, Raph.
Bye-bye.